It's Wednesday, March 14th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 43 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and here with me today is Mike.
Hello.
John.
Hey.
And Adam.
I'll be playing the part of Chad tonight, so I'll be loud and obnoxious.
Wow.
Continue.
Dang.
For those of you that have not heard, well, this was announced in our forums, but I realize not everyone uses our forums. Shame on you guys. But for those of you who don't use our forums, Chad and Dawn had their baby this past Wednesday, born, I believe, around 6:30, 8 pounds, 2 ounces, some number of inches.
21 inches.
21 inches. And because of this, Chad is not going to be on the show, obviously, for this episode. And I don't know if he's going to be back next episode either.
2 weeks off?
He has bigger fish to fry.
What will we ever do without Chad for two
whole weeks?
An 8 pound,
2 ounce fish to fry.
Yeah, that'll feed like four people.
Once.
All right, folks. We haven't had a contest in a long time. And we're at such a crossroads that we need the help of you, the Fear the Boot community, to get us through. Last episode, we mentioned Chad the Travesty, a hot new role-playing game, not from the World of Darkness system, but along those lines.
Was this mentioned the last episode?
No, it was this episode.
It was this episode.
No, it was the episode before last episode.
Okay, two episodes, whatever.
All right, point is.
At some point in the indeterminate past, Chad the Travesty was raised, and I am completely burned out from writing Monostat to make up a new rule system, so I need your help. I want 500 words or less of a campaign setting slash character sheet for Chad the Travesty himself.
Character sheet's optional.
Character sheet optional. The campaign setting is the contest.
And we don't need any rules because it's already Monostat system.
Oh, no, totally Monostat compliant. We're taking D20 by storm one system at a time, and you're going to help us. That's part of the plan.
And the reward?
The reward is you get to decide a topic for a Fear the Boot show. Now, if it's really off the wall, we'll make it a bonus episode. If it works, we'll put it in a regular episode. If it's completely obscene or stupid, we'll laugh at you and you'll have wasted all your precious effort.
The only restrictions on this is, per our usual stuff, please nothing that's unreasonable, nothing that's obscene, nothing that's political, religious.
Yes.
It's got to be something that we can reasonably talk about. But if you want to hear us talk about anything at all, we will talk about it, and like John said, if it's RPG-related, we'll do it in a regular episode. If it's not RPG-related, you want to hear us just talk about the cars we first owned or whatever ridiculous crap, we'll do it as a bonus episode.
I got some stories about the car I first owned.
I saw that car.
Let's set a deadline on this. John, when do you want these? How many weeks do you want to give them to give?
We'll give the good people 2 weeks, because this is a fairly heavy undertaking.
All right, so let's give them the 2.5 weeks. And let's say the deadline is going to be noon Central Time on Saturday, March 31st, which will be 2.5 weeks from the release of this episode. We'll create a thread on our forums.
In the contest
area. Come in there. Post your idea for Chad the Travesty, 500 words or less, campaign setting only. Character sheet's optional. Art's optional. All we need is the campaign setting. We don't need rules. Just setting.
No, and you can take it any way you want. If Chad the Travesty is a world in which people suddenly erupt into Chads, go ahead. If Chad the Travesty is a world in which there are opposing clans of Chads fighting it out beneath the underworld, write it. I want it all. And make it as terrible as you can, please.
Welcome to Earth Sky.
Yep.
Mike, you have some kind of an axe to grind.
Oh, yes, I do have an axe to grind.
Okay,
we were talking before the show about the element of dice in the game, and I get frustrated because the randomness of dice has too much of an influence in the game. For example, if I have a character with an 18 attribute in D&D, I have only a 2 chances in 20 of failing the roll, if I did my math right. But invariably, I will fail my roll because I'm a crappy roller, and I don't think that that's right when I have an 18 attribute. So I was just saying before the show that I think the dice have too much influence on games, and I thought it might make an interesting banter topic. Do you guys disagree?
Just to clarify your example, you're talking an old school stat check. Roll equal or under to do this thing, not the third edition difficulty class with modifiers.
Okay, well, I'm saying dice rolls in general. I use that as an example, which is an old school stat check. Yes.
Okay.
But okay, fine, my to hit roll. Let's say I'm level 15 warrior, and I've got my +2 sword, and I roll a 1.
Man,
I'm
that's
screwed.
Crappy equipment at level 15. But yeah, you are screwed. The one represents the virtual 1 in 20 chance that anyone will fail at anything, no matter how good they are.
Well, it's 1 in 20 for you. It's 1 in 20 for you. For me, it's far more than 1 in 20. Doesn't make scientific sense,
well,
but I assure you it's true.
I'm talking about the natural one. And you're saying you have much more natural ones than merely 5% of the time?
Dan can attest to this. Hell yes.
Okay.
Well, am I wrong?
I can tell you a story about this.
Go ahead.
There was one time Chad was running a Battletech game.
Oh, this one's good.
2d10. We're doing a combat drop, huge battalion full of forces. 2d10, he gives me the dice. I roll 2d10, I roll 17%. Okay, 17% of your people make it. What?
What?
This radically derailed a campaign. We were going to finally have the Battletech campaign in which we weren't a beaten, ragged, running scared lance that was dropped behind enemy lines and didn't have enough hats and toothbrushes. And then we rolled this percentile roll, and we were right back there.
So I understand that, yes, there are some times when rolling can, I don't know, derail the entirety of the game, but...
There's no such thing as a physical force of chance. All right, if I take a coin and flip it, there is no chance affecting this flip. I mean, the flip may have a certain percentage chance of landing one way or the other, but ultimately, if you knew all the variables that went into it, exactly how hard I flipped it and from what position, and all the currents in the air and all this kind of crap going on, assuming you don't want to get into some weird theoretical physics, we just take straight Newtonian kind of stuff, you can tell me exactly how that coin is going to land.
So essentially, what you're saying is it is Mike's fault that he rolls poorly.
No. But what I'm saying is...
You didn't account for the air, Mike.
Don't apply this to the dot. My point is that within a role-playing game, there is a level of unpredictability that they are trying to simulate through that seeming randomness. That if you take a guy who's a trained shooter who is standing 6 feet away from a person who's holding completely still, something could happen to keep them from hitting. The gun jams. They slip. The other person ducks to pick up a nickel at the last second.
I agree, and I understand.
And the game simply cannot be so rules robust as to take into account all these little things. So instead, it simply says, use some kind of more or less random number generator, and that random element is going to simulate all the physical and emotional things going into this that the game simply does not have rules to account for.
But our role-playing games invariably end up like a game of XCOM where all of your guys miss every shot they take. That's what I'm saying is that I agree with
what you do about that.
That's a good question.
I liked XCOM.
Well, I liked XCOM too, but my guys were always missing.
Yeah, they sucked. I mean, those guys were bad.
Anyway, so what do you do about it? Well, I guess we're doing a game creation series, so that's a good point to bring up with that. But somehow or other, I think it'd be nice if you could come up with a way to minimize the impact of the dice. I realize there has to be this random chance element to your actions, because stuff does happen, like you just said. But I think in the current gaming systems, a lot of times, it's too much.
Well, that gets into a judgment call, though. How much of reality do you think is based on what we perceive as chance, or how much is based on my skill?
I guess that's a relatively good point, but go to a firing range.
What about it?
And get shot.
And how many times when you shoot at a target on a firing range, how many times do you miss? A sharpshooter's not going to miss very many
times.
So you're
telling me that in a perfectly controlled environment where it's quiet, well, I mean, as quiet as a shooting range gets, but there's no distractions, you're
stock
still,
straight line,
shooting at a stationary target.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, so there isn't a whole bunch of elements involved that could possibly be represented by the dice. That I will shoot better than somebody else is shooting at me, and I'm running away and ducking behind cover and shooting behind my head.
So you're saying you disagree with me, basically.
Yeah, I am.
I don't disagree with your point so much as that exact example, Mike.
My problem is that Dan and I both, there's another guy we've played with in the past named Kevin. I guess it's okay to use his name.
Yeah.
But Kevin and I both have crappy, crappy roles, and it doesn't matter what level our characters are, it does not matter how skillful our characters are, invariably Kevin and I are missing most of our shots, we are missing most of our sword swings. So either you can say, we're complete dunces, our characters have no skill, or we're clumsy and awkward, but every character we make is clumsy and awkward because of the way we roll dice. That's my problem.
Yeah, I understand your frustration, and I've been there to watch your frustrations unfold.
Yes, exactly.
We have had Kevin do things like roll handfuls of six-sided dice, and I have watched him throw down 8, 10 six-sided dice, and
They're all ones and twos.
And the numeric chances of this are staggering, yet I watch it happen.
That's funny.
Because write it off as whatever you want to, but his luck is so bad personally.
No kidding.
His characters, even if it's like, all right, roll percentile dice, there's only 1% chance you can fail, and he will fail a lot more than 1% of the time.
And conversely, Dan is Mr. Lucky. If you're rolling D6s in Shadowrun, it's 6, 5, 6, 6, 6, 5. Maybe 1-4.
Yeah, but can you write a rule system around the fact that, oh, Bob down the street rolls real lucky. We're going to have to put some numbers on him.
No, you can't, but you can de-emphasize the impact dice have on your character's actions.
That's the part that I'm questioning. I don't know that you can, because really, you have to do one of two things, or one of three things. One is account for everything, which you can't do reasonably. Account for the bird that's distracting you, and the kind of surface you're running on, and the brand of shoes you're wearing, and at that point it ceases to be random because you know all the factors. The second possibility is to eliminate random decision-making without knowing all the elements, where you now get into collaborative storytelling. If I just say, okay, I fired and I hit. Or I fire and I miss. And there are some games that are conducted this way, which is fine, but this is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the traditional role-playing game.
No.
Your third option is to not account for everything that's going on, yet still try to take them into account through some sort of random decision maker. And I'm with John. I mean, I realize it sucks for some people and doesn't for others just because of their personal luck, but I don't know how you eliminate that without radically deforming the entire experience of playing a role-playing game.
I don't think you can eliminate it, but I think you can reduce it. Now, of course...
Well, give an example. How would we reduce it?
And that's where I'm struggling, is that I can't tell you how to do this. I'm just thinking it should be possible.
Well, you know what? Perhaps you and Kevin should rack up enough advantage points that you could work off your own disadvantage of poor roller.
Wow.
Maybe you shouldn't have taken that one in character creation.
Like in Battletech, I always take extra edge for that reason. Every Battletech game, I take extra edge. That accounts for it a little bit. But most game systems don't have that kind of thing.
See, you know, this gets actually back into the debate we have had on here several times, which is, should you roll social skills or just role play them out? And it gets down to that critical issue.
Oh, Chad's not here. I'm not taking his place in this argument.
I'm not trying to rehash that debate, but it gets down to that same issue of how much of what occurs at the table should be your character versus how much of it is you. And here's an example, this time through the luck of the dice, where the person that is playing the character is bleeding into the character's
existence.
Your
character's punished for your poor role.
Well, yeah, my poor luck is impacting every character I make. That's true.
Yeah, but you have to accept the existence of a luck attribute that's tied to you as a human being to make that argument. And I can't do it.
No, you don't.
I'm not arguing for some metaphysical version of luck or karma or something that's wildly out of the scope of this discussion. I'm just making the point that I will say, in my experience, I have sat at a table with someone like Tim, where when he throw those dice down, call it whatever you want, but more often than not, he will roll way above average.
I call that weighted dice.
And I have sat with someone like Mike, who once again, attribute it to whatever you like, but when he throws those dice down, you can bet that he's going to roll poor. Chad does the same thing with Adam. He says that when he, in a campaign, wants a random roll and wants it to go poorly, like he wants a problem to occur, he will pass the dice to Adam. And almost without fail, Chad gets what he wants. Adam rolls piss poor.
Well, and I have Dan roll my combat rolls for me and people get mad, but it's just because...
it's the only way Mike ever sees a natural 20.
That's right.
Is if I roll the dice for him.
Wow.
It's ridiculous, but it's true.
That's hilarious.
Dan's Mr. Luck over here, and I'm just terrible with the dice. So anyway, yes, I do have an axe to grind, and that is it.
While we're taking these, as John likes to call them, mental number twos, where we just dump out these thoughts that are caught in our minds, there's something that I want to talk about with the listeners. And normally I do this through open letters or things that I've thought out more carefully, and I haven't this one. I just want to kind of shoot from the hip and be fairly candid, just to let you guys know what is going on here at the show right now. First of all, in the immediate term, the design series is nearly over. We have two more episodes to go, this one and one more, where we are going to talk about some of the later production or post-production concerns that surround making a role-playing game. We're going to talk about copyrights. We're going to talk about designing expansions, doing layout and organization of the book. We have some other subjects on design we want to talk about that we are not qualified really to even just pontificate about. So we are going to come back to issues like distribution, marketing, publication, and all that stuff. But we're going to do that by interviewing people that know more about these subjects than we do. And the interview episodes, at least as it stands now, are not part of our regular show schedule. So you will hear these topics, but the design series is still effectively going to end after the next episode, at which point we are going to return to Fear the Boot's original layout of banter topics, followed by some kind of advice on conducting the role-playing game. Now, along those lines...
Having said that,
this is where things take a turn for the different. I wouldn't say for the worse or for the better, but just for the different. One of the things that we are up against right now at Fear the Boot is when we do these episodes, we have to make sure that we do a couple things. Any topics we come up with, number one, have to stretch for about an hour in length. Number two, have to be RPG related. Number three, have to be of interest to us, because even if it's a neat idea, if we just don't know enough about it, don't care enough about it to discuss it, it does us no good. And number four is really worthy of discussion. If just one of us makes a point that we all agree with, that's...
Yeah, there's no discussion there.
That's 30.
And then we have to listen to Dan talk for an hour, and nobody wants that.
Yeah, and I just have to inflate.
Except for Francis.
Well, he only wants that on Friday night when it's time to dim the lights.
We turn the lights down low and turn on a little bit of Barry in the background. Then hear Dan talk about role-playing games as we snuggle by a bottle of Chandon. But...
Oh, that's disturbing.
Damn, dude.
We are now coming up on the one-year anniversary of Fear the Boot within, I believe, about the next 2 months or so. And one of the issues that we are hitting up against is the list of topics that fit all of those criteria is getting fairly slim. And we have found that there's still a lot to talk about with role-playing games, but every one of those subjects does not fit one of those four criteria. For example, there are tons of RPG novels, but that's not the angle this show takes. The industry is always changing and moving forward, but this show is not a product preview and industry news sort of show.
And none of us keep up with that.
Yeah, none of us really keep up with
it. And none of us are really interested in that, so...
So what I am seeing with Fear the Boot, this show is not going to end. We've been very successful with this show. We've gotten great feedback. We love the listeners that we've been interacting with. Fear the Boot is absolutely not going to end. But I want to warn you guys that over time, the format of this show is going to have to evolve at least a little bit, or simply put, we are going to run out of topics, and sitting there scratching our heads in absolute hand-wringing burnout, that will be the end of the show. Now, what exactly does this mean? At this point, I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure if you guys send us in some topic suggestions that may help a little, you may hit on something that we didn't think of that does fit our four criteria, but even then, that's just kind of delaying the inevitable that they're... From the angle of this show, there's only so much to say about role-playing games. So more what we are leaning to is the format of this show is going to change a little bit. We are still going to be an RPG podcast, and every single episode we are still going to devote significant amount of time to talking about RPGs. But we may begin introducing other topics that we have not talked about before, like comic books and movies and television shows. And
I can talk about Smallville?
Yeah, all these other kind of...
No.
All these other kind of geek-related subjects that do not necessarily tie directly into role-playing games, just because that's what we need, really, to keep this show alive and moving. And I'm telling you guys this now because this change is not going to happen immediately. This change is not going to happen next show or the show after next or whatever. This is something that may still be probably even a couple months away. But I want to tell you guys this now for a couple reasons. One is so that you're not shocked when it happens. And the other is so that you guys have an opportunity to give us feedback to say, look, you know, I don't mind if you guys do this. I understand why you're having to do it. Don't do this. You know, that's if you guys do this, that's the end of my listening to you guys. Or even just say, hey, if you are going to go that direction, here's what I'd like to hear about. But I just think really for the sake of keeping this show fresh and alive and moving forward, we're at a point now where it's not we want to do other things, but we have to do other things, because otherwise I'm not sure there's any place more for this thing to go 6 months from now. So just something for you guys to be thinking about.
Francis is right. I totally zoned out when you were talking to me. We're ending the show? Is that what I'm getting out of this?
No, that is not what you should get out of this at all. Okay. The show is not ending. The show is not even abandoning its central topic of role-playing games. It's just going to have to evolve to keep it such that we still have things to talk about, even as we hit the end of the topic list.
I getting my morning show host wacky noises soundboard yet?
Yes.
Good.
Yes, you will. We are going to turn into a complete morning zoo.
Oh, my God.
Perfect.
You know what happens at the zoo, Adam?
No.
Oh, what happens at the zoo?
Between animals.
Oh.
We're going to have the hardvark. We're going to make a whole hardvark house.
Adam?
God knows we could populate it very quickly.
With the amount of furry porn email you've gotten, it is beyond me how you cannot know what goes on at the zoo.
Oh, I know.
You should know what goes on in every single cage, every single aquarium, every single little habitat.
Every single time one cage breaks and it goes into another one.
The problem is that it is always on my mind, except for when we're recording, because then my mind is laser focused on the topic at hand.
Oh, right.
Like
right,
when I zoned right. out when you were talking.
That's right, exactly. All right, let's get down to the advice topics for today.
Nah, let's not do that. All right, let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. We've got two we're going to cover. The first is going to be designing expansions for your role-playing game. And the second is going to be a little bit of stuff on copyright protection. I've got all kinds of thoughts there, but we're going to hold that.
Danicture.
That's right. It is going to be a danicture just because I'm going to be offering some legal pointers and then backing them up with sources. This will not be your typical unqualified internet legal advice. But the result is there's not a whole lot
of
discussion.
It'll be atypical unqualified legal advice.
That's right. So let's talk about expansions for your role-playing game.
Let's talk about expansions.
Let's start with the first question. Should you even have expansions for your role-playing game?
I think you should have expansions.
I do, too. Ever since Warcraft 2 Beyond the Dark Portal, I was sold, even though that had nothing to do with tabletop role-playing.
Okay. Dan?
The debate on whether to have expansions or not, I guess, comes from the intention of your product. If you intend...
Make money all day long.
Well, that's part of it. But if you intend for this story or this game to keep going on, to keep growing and to keep changing, you need expansions. But if this is the sort of thing where it's a one-shot and there's not a whole lot else for it to go, like there was a two-season TV show you want to make a role-playing game for, probably one source book is all you're going to get out of this without straying so far from your original topic, there's no point anymore.
Yeah, don't put something out that doesn't need to be put out.
And that's something big, is make sure this even needs expansion and have some idea of how you're going to expand it. I think I've seen a lot of games, both role-playing and video, where they put out expansions that you know were never planned. Movie sequels is another great example of,
yes,
this. How many times have you seen a part two to something where at the end of part one, there was really no sense at all that this movie actually had anywhere else to go?
Well, you know, Chris Hussey talked about this exactly. He talked about in the late days of second edition how TSR was printing out expansions to cover the costs of the other expansions they were printing out.
Oh, that wasn't Chris. That was
Ryan Dancy.
That was Ryan Dancy.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry,
TV
Ryan.
Shows do this too. Stargate Season 8 wrapped up every single plot line that they opened from Season 1, and then they put out Season 9 for no reason. It was awful. Anyway, moving on.
Something else that I have noticed in TV shows or movies that do a good job of expanding is typically you can find out if you dig around, they actually already had the expansions in mind, that even while they were writing movie one, they were already thinking about a plot for movie two. With a role-playing game, I'd say, you know, as you're sitting there writing that first source book, this is the stuff that you are keeping in mind that would be very interesting to develop for the second source book or the third source book.
I'm still waiting on the Alien vs. Predator sequel where the Predalien wrecks crap on the Predator planet, just for the record.
Who and what?
They opened up a plot line at the end of the AVP. One of the facehuggers got a hold of one of the Predators, and now there's a Predator alien.
Oh, Predalien. I couldn't understand that noun in there.
No.
I just thought something was going to show up and destroy their home world.
It's canonical. Look up the AVP computer game handbook.
That's
there.
Okay.
Boring.
So too are the Runner, the Xenomorph, and the Praetorian. I know.
I've never understood this whole versus thing. Freddy versus Jason, Alien versus Predator. Who cares? Why is this interesting to people?
It's interesting to Bill Paxton because he's been killed by all of them. And a Terminator. He's the best actor in Hollywood as far as I care. Do you know how awesome it would be to be killed by a Terminator, a Predator, and an Alien? That'd be great. Game over, man.
Never mind, I can't even follow up on this one. I understand it sometimes. I think it's a bit overblown, but I understand it sometimes.
Very campy and cheesy, but it's fun.
There's some big time.
If you've ever read The Dark Knight Returns, you know that versus can work.
What is that? Batman versus Superman?
Batman versus Superman. Frank Miller. That can work.
Is that the one where they get into the big fight?
If it's a versus thing, yes.
No, they have a debate. It's televised. It ends in a chess game.
I bet Superman loses.
You just like dumb. He can't dog. He's a dumb.
You just like Batman, but this is still a matter of who has a bigger wing, and that's all it is.
Well, but you could say that even about any plot line. I mean, good guy versus bad guy, isn't that about who has the bigger wing, the good guy or the bad guy? I mean, if you're doing this, all of storytelling is conflict, man versus something, and something ends up with the bigger wing. So if you're really going to go that way, then...
But if your whole plot line is... Who has a bigger wang?
Yeah.
That's a little bit
different. Does Nurse Ratched have a bigger wang than Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, who has a bigger wang? Captain Ahab or Moby Dick? Who has the bigger wang? You know, that's the sum of storytelling.
Nah, that's a gross overgeneralization, but okay.
How is that a gross overgeneralization?
You just make a gross overgeneralization.
You're saying all conflict is who has a bigger wang. I'm saying
Did you just say that?
No, I'm saying the versus series are that way. When your whole plot is who has a bigger wang, Batman or Superman.
But a plot... A versus thing is conflict, but except it's just typically between two people that are on the same side. You know, two bad guys or
aliens
two good guys.
Aliens and predators
are
on the same side.
Well, no, they're both bad guys that kill people, so I guess in that regard they're on the same side. But
I don't have a witty comeback for this just yet, but I don't agree.
Oh. Well, you sit and think on it, and next week we are starting the episode with Mike's witty comeback.
No pressure, yeah.
No pressure, you have a week!
My redemption show.
Yes.
I don't need redemption.
All righty.
Pass this travesty.
Yeah, all right.
Let's the travesty's about... Chad, and he's gone.
Chad the travesty. Did you see somebody on the forum playing Chad the travesty?
Oh, God, the new World of Darkness game?
Uh-huh.
Chad the travesty.
Nice.
They can't be any
Somebody
funny.
Make up that character sheet and send it to us.
Oh, my God.
That'd be a perfect welcome back present for Chad.
That can't be any funnier, though, than the Magic the Gathering cards they were making for the show a while back.
Those were hilarious.
Those were
quality.
Good.
Those were priceless.
All right, anyway.
I loved my card. It was the Scales of Justice.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
They made one for Fear the Boot?
Yeah.
They made one for all of us hosts. Phil's was
That's
like
awesome.
A bunch of guns.
Phil's a host now?
No.
He sat in on a couple episodes.
Oh, I see.
He sat in on a couple episodes. We've had a few people like that that kind of sat in on a couple episodes. They weren't per se hosts, but they hosted a show, so I guess they're hosts with a small H, not a capital H.
No, it's not that Phil's a host. It's just that we use Phil for every single Power Gaming example we come up with.
Yeah,
so.
Fair enough.
He's a fixture.
He's an archetype.
Getting back to source books, I've come up with a couple purposes that a source book can serve. And of course, a source book could serve one or many of these. But these are the ones, roughly speaking, I came up with of why you might create a source book. One is to advance the plot. If you have a game world where the plot is moving forward, wars are occurring, allegiances are shifting, people are being born and dying, you may need a source book for that. And I guess as a similar thing to that, if you have something like Dragonlance, where novels are advancing the plot, but the role-playing game itself needs to reflect those changes, then I'd still consider it basically the same thing, that you're using a source book to advance the plot or account for plot advancement. The second one is to keep your audience interested in the game. Bringing out new, fresh, different content keeps people coming back. It keeps them from getting bored with that one source book and moving on somewhere else. You can expand the rules. This could be equipment or new contingencies or new detail, like super detailed vehicle rules that didn't exist in the main book or anything that floats your boat. Expanded setting, number four. Adding new places, new people. I guess you get back to equipment on this one, also new gear. And fifth, let's be honest.
Cash cow.
You put out new source books as a way of keeping the money coming in, because if you want to keep developing this great role-playing game and convincing your wife that this really isn't a waste of time, then you have to keep that cash coming in. And so that
it better be a lot of cash to convince her it's not a waste of time.
That's an aspect of it. I hope that's not the only reason you're putting a source book out, because if you have done that, then you are getting yourself into the TSR end of days scenario that we mentioned a short bit ago and discussed at length with Ryan Dancy. And the punchline of the end of days scenarios is, guess what? Your company and your games come to an abrupt halt and then get picked up by somebody else if you're lucky.
And then get retransformed with Tordek.
And Mealy.
Yes.
And Josen.
Let's not go through this again. No,
for
let's
the
not.
Third episode.
We said it before, but let's say it again. If you are going to do these source books, plan for them in advance. As you're putting down the letters of your first source book, have in mind that these are the kinds of things that you would like to do. And I realize that may change, because once you put it out there, you may realize that fan interest is limited to a specific area or something's come along that's nudging you to develop this area instead of that area. So things may change, but just be sure that you have planned into your design room to allow for these new source books.
What makes a crappy expansion?
Don't get me started.
Oh, I want you to get started.
Oh, I'll give you a big one right now. It increases power, but not depth.
Oh, so like you just get more of the same stuff that was already there, causing a further time commitment at no real increase in enjoyment.
Exactly.
Oh, so Burning Crusade.
You could call this Burning Crusade. You could call this any one of the Magic the Gathering expansions. But where somebody dumps out stuff that's just more powerful, making it obsolete. So if you want
Didn't 40K do this too?
40K does this all the time.
40K did it and called it the Space Marines.
If you want something that's bigger and badder and more powerful than ever seen before, the biggest guns, the most powerful monsters, you have to pick up this new expansion.
Well, a lot of that comes in with the cash cow thing from the last point that we made.
Yeah, it takes no effort and it gets you money.
Yeah, it takes absolutely no effort to keep going up. It takes a lot of effort to keep going out.
I can double the strength on this unit and then sell it again?
Yeah, exactly. Sweet. And people have to buy it because they've already bought the weaker units, and now this one will kick the crap out of all of them. So to be competitive, they have to go buy this unit
that's
for
the
their
perfect
army
model.
Now. Oh, that's crap, you guys. You guys hate 40K so much, but that's crap.
I've never played 40K, Mike.
Well, then what are you talking about?
Is it or is it not a fact that they did this with the game?
Yes, but they balance them back out later on. The Space Marines
after
now are not over.
Oh, so you buy it
after
again.
After you bought them, yeah, they balance
but
them back out.
But you can use
out.
Your old Space Marines, no problem.
I still had to buy them for $400. Or rather, not buy them on the epiphany that my Eldar were useless then not play the game.
So go to eBay or go to a used gaming auction.
Let me make one thing clear.
That still costs money.
I enjoy 40K. Okay?
What game doesn't?
I like the game. But as a man who picked up a second edition Tyranid Gene Stealer Cult combination army and had to throw out pretty much every single model I own to get newer, bigger, badder, more powerful things in fourth edition, I don't even want to hear it.
But oh, you're just bitter.
I like 40K. It's a fun game. It really is. But
I want to see the MMO do well so I can play it and be a Zergling. A Tyranid.
You know what? Actually, same thing with Magic. I actually enjoyed Magic, but they did the exact same thing where every single expansion was just bigger and badder. It was not different or whatever. Anyway.
But Space Marines are different, and that's my point. And they are balanced now. Now, I will give you that the Necrons and the
Tau.
Yeah, oh, God. Yeah, the Necrons and the Tau are not right now balanced, but they might be later.
How will they balance it later? Will they make them weaker, or will they make a new army that is equivalent
Look,
in power that you have to buy again?
It will involve somebody buying new models.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's when I played Necrons, they were totally gimped. There was like a total of three models and one vehicle. And I was like, this concept's awesome, but they suck.
I don't think there's a person alive that would argue the point that Games Workshop is out to make money and that's all they care about. I agree with that, too. But that doesn't mean the game is awful. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I didn't say it was awful.
Well, all right, moving on. I think there are other ways you can trivialize previous content, not just through power. But, for example, let's say you are telling a story about a particular nation, and in the next source book, you don't just talk about another area, but you shut down the story in the previous area to move it somewhere else. You've just wasted all that previous content. Another one is adding pointless stuff. And I think this typically comes from being out of connect with your community. Your community loves playing the game in a certain way and likes certain things. And you dump out a source book that develops absolutely none of it. You just have trash and clutter that nobody cares about.
Who did that?
I won't mention the MechWarrior Companion, but I have definitely seen this happen in the past.
I see.
Chris Hussey confessed to me that he may have had something to do with that.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Oh, Chris, tell me it ain't so.
I know. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. He could have told me he beats his children, and I'd have had more respect for him.
Do you have Inconsistent up there?
No, I do not, but that's a good one, Adam. Go ahead.
My expansion packs like I like my poop. Consistent.
I love when they put something out, and then they put something out right after that completely contradicts what they've already put out. And I can't even give you a good example. Natasha Kerensky.
Yeah.
Lived for like 200 million years in Battletech Universe.
Yeah.
And she was still really hot when she was a 200-year-old great-great-great-great-great-grandma. Kicking ass. Of pseudo-Germans.
I think some of that is hard to get around a little bit, because especially you were just picking on Battletech there, which I would agree with. But within Battletech, they had so many facts, so many writers, so many there's so much minutia to the universe that it was very, very hard to keep every single little fact straight.
Well, that would be like a 10-man team, 40-hour-a-week job.
Look at Star Trek. I mean, talk to a real hardcore Star Trek fan, and they will point out inconsistencies on the show that it's not the obvious stuff, like in this scene they said A, and in that scene they said not A. But it's like just these tiny little things like, oh, well, he has this sword hanging here, but in this episode...
But Deck 13 isn't the engineering deck.
Yeah. What the hell is O'Brien doing there? He's chasing Bashir's skirt. Yeah, I said it.
Wow, the Deep Space Nine population speaks.
It does.
All one of them.
All one of them, indeed.
Hey, 10,000 Frenchmen.
No, actually, if Chad was here, he'd be backing you up, too. He was a big Deep Space Nine fan, I think. He'd never admit it.
No, he did admit it.
Oh, did he admit it?
Well, you know, no one likes Deep Space Nine.
That's true. So it's his favorite. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's to like?
What?
Everything.
Quark.
No.
Oh,
rules of acquisition.
No.
I want to be a Ferengi between undergrad and law school in Vegas.
Let's move past this.
So we were talking about bad examples with expansions, but what about good examples? I can at least come up with one, and that's Rifts. With Rifts, what little bit of setting is in the game I've gotten from expansions. The main rulebook only has a little bit of stuff on the Coalition and the wild people like Glitter Boys and mad mages and silly stuff, mad psychers or whatever it is.
Who thought it was a good idea to call them Glitter Boys?
Who thought that game was a good idea?
I've
never played it. I flipped through the book. It just looks god-awful.
Oh, it's terrible. But what I'm saying is it's a good example of expansions.
I had somebody actually come to the forums and ask, do you guys have anything nice to say about Rifts?
No.
And well, I do.
Hey, we just did.
I enumerated three things on the forum I like about Rifts. They were not tongue-in-cheek. They were not like left-handed insults or whatever. But
mega damage?
No, I wouldn't. I don't remember what the three... I like the art, I think, was one thing. I like the game concept, the flexibility that's built into it. I can't remember what the third thing was.
Ah, so you're beautiful, but you're just not right for me right now, huh?
Yeah,
It's not you, it's me.
Okay.
You know what I like? You know what I love about this podcast? The topic that Mike introduced was things that we like about expansions, and then we immediately move into trashing Rifts.
I tried to keep it positive.
All right, let's talk about expansions.
You made a noble effort, Mike.
That's because you're too new.
Yeah, you haven't been broken yet.
The vampire expansions, the World of Darkness
those
expansions.
Those are very good.
Those are really good. Now, of course, you could debate, are they expansions to the world or self-contained games? And probably, in truth, they're both. But I think those are great. They introduce a whole lot of new material. They take the game outward, not upward.
I agree. They, especially like the old version of Vampire, because we're not as familiar with the newer versions of World of Darkness. But those expansion books added a lot of meat, setting, and different ways of fleshing out your character that were not present in the main book. So I agree with you.
Another expansion I liked, I'll name two, both by FASA. The Neo-Anarchist Guide to North America was pure setting information, all very well presented. This was for Shadowrun. And then in Battletech, Objective Raids. Objective Raids...
That was a good book.
It was a great book because you have this huge galaxy, and one of the frustrations I had with the game was that I never knew that much about the galaxy as a whole, like what's on this planet and what's going on in this system. And Objective Raids did not answer those questions, but they went a long way toward kind of giving you some sort of clue about what was going on.
My favorite expansion book of all time remains the Essential Book of Humanoids from the late but not quite terminal days of second edition.
Oh, you're talking about where you could play like a kobold?
Oh, yeah.
I loved that
book. Basically have two moods when I'm gaming. I want to play an orc or I want to play a kobold. And this Book of Humanoids let me do both, and I was happy forever.
We need to make you a mood ring like that, that has two colors, orc
and kobold.
And kobold.
Orc would just be this tusk, and kobold would be a stick with a scorpion at the end on a string.
And this is what your ring goes back and forth between.
Yes. It probably would be on the scorpion right now. I'm feeling koboldish. I don't know why.
Forgotten Realms source book for D&D. The most recent one, third edition. One,
yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I thought that was very well put together. It had great information in it, great organization, served an obvious purpose because D&D is a generic rule system and this, you know, was a setting for it. Love that expansion.
One of my friends picked it up in high school and I think read it through his geometry class every day. In plain sight.
You know, I miss not being in school because, honestly, I got so much RPG-related stuff done during school.
Oh, yeah. No, totally.
I got so many plots written. I wrote whole game systems. The original Skies of Glass was written entirely during a college philosophy class.
Yeah, I haven't been doing it as much in college since I'm now at the point where I'm actively engaged in my majors and not just fapping the time away until I can get to that point.
And but, of age to drink?
Well, not during class.
Well,
you lack creativity.
Yeah. What college did you go to?
No, but anyway, I'm going to propose the repeal of Prohibition Day in my constitutional class. I'm going to be like, hey, we need to exercise our rights. I'm bringing Bud Light.
Most teachers will let you bring in a water bottle. I guess you could have vodka in it.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I have a flask.
I actually know someone
perfectly surreptitious.
Someone had that. There was a girl who used to walk around with this water bottle all the time. And one day, all of a sudden, her dad shows up and yanks her out of school. And there's all this drama surrounding her. And they take all of her stuff. And it turns out that this water bottle she'd been walking around for years of college was vodka. And she was perpetually drunk.
At our high school, we had these girls who would carry around these spray bottles that they use for the hair. And they put liquor in them. And they were spraying it in their mouths in class. I remember that.
The hot thing now is the Nalgene's. Like, the middle schoolers, my brother will relay these stories since he just got out of a 7th through 12 high school. And you would hear who got in trouble for what. And they would have these little Nalgene bottles at their mixers and just fill them up with vodka.
Wow.
All right, getting back to source books.
Yeah,
expansion. The vodka source book.
Yeah, how to get drunk in school. Or rather, how not to, I guess, are all our stories. But anyway, Adam, you haven't offered a positive example. Anything
Yeah, Mr. Negative.
No, I agreed with Dan's Battletech objective.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
I'll take it.
So you're not adding anything to the show, but you are a yes man of sorts. So.
Yes.
A yes
Actually,
man is valuable.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm supposed to be playing Chad. No.
No, I hate expansions forever.
I hate expansions.
Okay, there you go.
Too many rules. Formless story.
I liked the
esoteric characters are their own reward.
Keep going.
Games for games sake. I don't even.
Okay. You did a great job.
I tune him out too.
Thanks, Chad.
But probably the most recent D&D book or RPG book period I've bought was the Stormwrack 3rd edition expansion set. And it's a full hardbound. I don't know what moved me to get it, but it's all these rules about how to set a seafaring campaign in like a port town and how to handle your players all being pirates and all this stuff like that. And it was really, really well done. There was ship-to-ship combat rules. And
you know, at the risk of sounding schizophrenic, I'm actually going to say something nice about Games Workshop. Even though I don't like some of the content of their expansions, in terms of, like, I don't like how they just keep increasing power levels and forcing you to rebuy models, I do really like some of the other stuff in their expansions. They do a great job of kind of adding in some fluff, and they usually...
Hey, beware the mutant, the traitor, the heretic.
Heretics, or the, they have great art, and there's a lot of cool stuff in their expansion books, even for armies I'm not playing. I found myself sitting there and just flipping through and looking at the pictures and reading the stories.
Oh, there's no doubt that those pictures and stories have made up more minds regarding what army to pick than actual rules
absolutely.
Have. I hate elves and I love Eldar. I mean, that's a massive achievement because all they are is space elves.
For our second advice topic, we are going to talk about copyright protection.
You say we. And I think by we, you mean you.
Okay. I'm going to talk about, and you're going to listen to me talk about copyright protection.
I may offer witty comments.
I might interject with internet anecdotes that I know are true because my friend Bob heard it from a guy down the street.
Lols, Raffle.
OMFG.
Let's go ahead and start with that. Typically, when I talk to people about copyright stuff, instantly, what they chime in with is they heard on the internet or their criminal justice major friends said or whatever.
It's legal to steal MP3s.
And the fact is, I don't care. I can't argue with rumor. What I am giving to you right now comes directly from the government's own provided public literature on copyrights. Okay, this is not my opinion. This is not what I got off a forum. This is not what my buddy with a technical degree told me. This came straight off the government's own material. If you disagree with this and you are not an intellectual properties lawyer, you are probably wrong. And I don't say, because this is not my word. If it was me versus whatever, I'd probably be wrong. But this is not what I'm cooking up. This is all coming straight from the government's own material.
Okay, so rumor and hearsay.
Right.
They can verify this at what site?
All right, you can verify this all for yourself. And I will recommend everyone who is into this kind of thing to go check this out. Go to copyright.gov. It's just COPYRIGHT, copyright.gov. The government has a large website set up that has a ton of useful information organized into nice little FAQs where you can go in there and quickly reference this stuff and learn all the things you need to learn about getting your works protected. Now, I recommend doing this because, simply put, nobody out there wants to think about rights protection, but if you are making a game that you seriously intend to sell, you need to cover your own butt, because somebody may come along, may steal your stuff, or may not even steal it wholesale, but steal major elements of it or major facets of it. And you need to know that you have some demonstrable way of proving this is yours and actually protecting that right. Now, in the U.S., and I'm going to speak from U.S. law here, all right? So if you're in another country, I apologize. I don't know what your government has set up to help you with stuff like this. This is all U.S. law. Within the United States, a work is copyrighted the moment it is put down on a tangible form. All right, what does that mean? If I'm writing a story, the minute that I write that story into a Word document, that story is copyrighted. It is not copyrighted in my head because there's no demonstrable tangible form that it exists in. But the moment I type it into a Word document, I have a U.S. federal copyright. Now, the Federal Copyright Office, through the Library of Congress, will allow you to register a copyright. Last I did this was $30. You fill out a form, you send in the work, they do some research and do some filing, they send you back a certificate saying that your work now has a registered copyright. The purpose of this registered copyright is so that you have proof of the date of writing, date of registration. You can say not only, hey, I wrote this, but here is proof beyond any shadow of a doubt that it was written on this particular date, and we know because the government is here backing this up. It's not universal, but with many other countries, we have reciprocation on copyrights. So if you get a registered U.S. copyright, you are protected in a whole lot of other countries. The exact list of which countries reciprocate with the U.S. is also provided on copyright.gov. As I have done creative stuff, I've had a lot of people suggest the poor man's copyright. This is where you take your work, you put it in an envelope, you take it down to the post office, seal it up, you have the post office send it to you, typically by some kind of like registered mail, to where it's now sealed up and has a date on it saying this is specifically when it was sent, and then you tuck this away in a drawer so that you can prove on such and such a date that you wrote this work, because you've got a postmark saying that, oh, this was written back in March of 03 or whatever the case is. The Copyright Office does not have a specific opinion on this, but what they do say is that this is not included anywhere in the law as a valid protection of a copyright or valid demonstration of the age of a document. This is where my knowledge gets fuzzy, so I don't want to start speaking with authority.
That's all we're all about here.
I have been told that something came up in some court case somewhere that actually struck down these poor man copyrights. Don't know if that's true. This gets into that realm of internet conjecture I'm trying to steer away from, so I don't know. But the Copyright Office says their recommendation is don't do it. Get a standard registered federal copyright, because that way you know for a fact you're walking on solid ground. And as I said, they're not that expensive. So if you've written a whole role-playing game, put months and months and months and months of work into this, it's probably worth the $30 in cost of postage for you to mail this off and get the actual thing done to it. Our Skies of Glass Q&A question today comes from Erebus631 on our forums. And Erebus asks, when you guys finally complete your first Skies of Glass production cycle, i.e. putting together all the rules and establishing the setting in written form, will your first Skies of Glass product be an all-inclusive book, complete with the full campaign settings, rules, monster index, etc.? Or will you split your labors into different volumes, such as a campaign setting, core rule book, and monster slash NPC manual of sorts? If you decide to split it up, which will you show to publishers first? This is actually a really good question that we ourselves are still a little bit unsettled on. And we have kicked around two possible models for Skies of Glass. The second is actually more likely than the first. So the first one, which is less likely, is that we will split the book into a rules book and a setting book.
Yeah, I don't like this one.
And we have not really felt too good about this one, because honestly, if we get into as many areas of rules as we want to and as many areas of setting as we want to, I'm not sure there's a real clean end to either book anyway. So it's,
yeah, separating the two would be
kind of
ugly.
Yeah. So what we're looking at instead is idea number two, which is in the first book, we are going to offer sufficient rules to play the game and to play its important major aspects, combat, non-combat pursuits, all the things we've talked about. We will then include enough setting for you to play that first campaign. And what we're looking at right now is doing the southeastern area of the United States. And I believe we have picked out 9 specific states that will include. So starting from Florida and working north and west until we've hit about 9 states. I don't know per se there's going to be a monster NPC index, but I guess in some ways there would be, because we do have some creatures that inhabit the world and such that it's not going to be per se a monstrous manual, but there are some noteworthy things out there.
It won't be enough to fill a whole source book.
The way I see it is the first source book's probably going to be 50% of it is rules, 50% of it's going to be setting, and we may actually even go a little bit more heavy on setting. And what
you could probably call monsters setting.
Yeah, you could. And what we are going to do with future source books is we will tack on to the rules a little bit in certain areas that we intend to not develop immediately, which is probably a good Skies of Glass Q&A for a future show to explain what those are. But then also we will come back and do additional settings. For example, the next source book we may do like the central south of the U.S. or the Midwest, or at some point we may go into Europe or Australia or whatever. So there's the answer to your question. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Ta-ta.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth. This show is copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in the show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.